Welcome to this RCGP podcast on challenging consultations. I'm Dr. Tony Hazel, Deputy Medical Director for e-learning at the RCGP. Today I'll be talking to Dr. Ed Pooley. Ed is a GP in Nottingham and a communication skills trainer, and most people will know him from his management of the Difficult Conversations Facebook group. Thank you for joining us today, Ed.
Thank you. It's a real privilege and honour to be here.
So I've really enjoyed working on this topic because it's something we deal with every day of our working lives. And before we get into details, do you have a general approach to consultations that are or might be challenging?
I think that for me, GP is an interesting specialty because unlike many specialties that are quite transactional, which is where a patient will come in, they will see you, they will be after something very specific, and the episode of care will be quite compartmentalized, GP is more relational. It's about relationship building. And so for me, I like to adapt my style of consultation to achieve that alongside all of those necessary things like information seeking, assessment, diagnosis, and more focus on things like rapport building, alignment, which most people will know as those sort of ICE questions, those ideas, concerns, and expectations, but also provide empathy where appropriate, or provide feedback to the patient on how I think they might be feeling or how I might feel in response to what they're saying, which is a more advanced consultation technique than many people learn, certainly during their training. For me, I think the interesting thing about consultation is that it becomes somewhat challenging when emotion is running high. And we often think about emotion as either sadness or despair or anger, or there might be drama brought into that situation. And these situations tend to push our buttons. They tend to make us on edge. They move us to sort of fast thinking processes. And that's when consultations can start to go wrong. So my approach to consulting sort of flips things on its head a little bit. We often hear about models such as Calgary, Cambridge, which talk very much about what we do in consultation, sort of information gathering, shared agenda, and seeking an outcome for the patient. I like to look at how consultations can become dysfunctional because I feel that that gives us a framework that we can focus on to understand why difficulties arise and what we can do about it. And the way that I do this is to break the consultation down into 9 key elements. And these are things that are present in the majority of consultations, but where consultations go wrong, it's usually with one or more of these 9 elements, and they're handily labeled A to I. They are alignment, that is those ICE questions and seeking shared agenda. Boundaries, that's the boundaries that you have around prescribing and what you can and can't do, and also what you should and shouldn't do as a GP. They're also about respecting the patient's boundaries as well. Then we've got communication style, which is your style of interacting, the word choice you have, the body language you use, and whether you're consistent with how you present yourself both physically and verbally. Then we've got D, which is deep structures. These are things that may be more familiar to people who've done training in psychiatry. So they're things such as transference, counter-transference, and scripted behaviour. Scripted behaviour is very common in interactions in primary care. It's the sort of thing where patients will come in and they have a bit of a script that they will say, and we have a scripted response as well. And that can be problematic if patients have a specific script that they've learned that may be not helpful for them in the current situation. Then we've got E, emotional awareness, that is empathy. Feedback, which is understanding how we feel in a consultation, but also using feedback as a tool to say what we need to say to patients in a non-threatening way. And you'll have seen that within the module that we've designed, which is that we might say things such as, I can see you're frustrated, or it feels like you may be thinking I'm being dismissive of your concerns. That's a good way of giving feedback, and it's a really helpful way of sharing information with a patient in a non-threatening way. Then for G, we've got gestalt, that is the big picture. That might be culture, context, and the surrounding family's ICE. You know, we often face those sorts of consultations where we don't really know what's going on, and then maybe on the second visit, they come in with a family member and you think, ah, it's your ice that I'm kind of dealing with in this presenting problem. Then we've got housekeeping, the traditional Roger neighbor, understanding how to keep ourselves safe so that we're not taking dysfunctional emotion into the next consultation or into our home life. And then finally, we've got information, which is the quality of information that we're gathering, the quantity of information, and the timing of information. And that relates to both gathering and giving and sharing information. And like I say, if you have a look at consultations that go wrong, it's usually within one of those nine domains, or perhaps a few more of them.
That's really interesting. My VTS was quite heavy on consultation skills, but I've never broken it down into such detail. Some of those examples, particularly when you realise it's the relative's agenda you're dealing with, not your own, can be really useful. So hopefully using a structure like that might help us to prevent a consultation going badly. But of course, it doesn't always work. And what is your approach when you're in a consultation that is beginning to go downhill or has gone downhill? I often find it very difficult to pull things back to end in a constructive way.
It's so hard, isn't it? Because we can often feel the consultation dynamic slipping. Looking at it in a broader scope, there's generally three challenges and three opportunities when you have a dysfunctional consultation. The challenge in the moment is to recognize the dysfunction. You know, are you being pulled into some drama that isn't yours? Are you being asked to do something that, you know, you feel hesitant to do and you don't have the words to push back on? It might be about having space to respond, giving yourself that critical thinking time in order to just create enough cognitive space so that you can come up with a better answer than often the knee-jerk answer that we might give if we're feeling under pressure. The last thing, and perhaps in some ways connected to that, is what we call the ego battle. This is commonly seen when we have a patient who, let's say they come in and they say something like, oh, I've got this virus, doc, and I've come in for my antibiotics. And instantly many GPs sort of feel, oh, you're not getting antibiotics for that because that's not a treatment. And we might say, well, that's not appropriate here. And then we find ourselves justifying our position and the patient finds themselves justifying their position. And it often ends as sort of butting heads. And if you can recognize that that's happening, you can find other ways around it. For example, instead of saying that instant no, you might say something like, it sounds like you've thought about this. Let's look at our options and we can come up with the best option together. How does that sound? Which completely avoids that conflict scenario. The opportunities that we've got for changing consultations that become dysfunctional are about realigning. Maybe it's about picking a different outcome. If the patient wants something that I can't offer, maybe we have to agree a sort of a middle road or a third way and share some of that fact that we're both letting go our positions to some extent. Then we've got empathy, which is a key skill. If you've got really good empathic skills and you're able to convey to a patient that you care about them, you care about their situation, and that you can understand their perspective, and you may not feel it to the level that the patient feels it, but understanding a patient's perspective gives you what I call credit in the bank. It gives you the ability to say no because the patient recognizes that you care. And we tend to be more receptive to people saying no or sort of guiding us away from our initial ideas if we recognize that they care and they're trying to do their best for us. The last thing is feedback, which I mentioned briefly earlier, which is that ability to say what you see in the moment. And the way that is most helpful for me when I find consultations becoming dysfunctional is to name the emotion I see. And it might be to say something to a patient like, you look frustrated, or it looks like the thought I had about how we might manage that doesn't quite fit with what you're expecting. Or I can see that you've got some hesitancy about what we've discussed here. Can you tell me a little bit more? And that feels a little bit more like how a consultation might go between a client and a psychotherapist. And in some ways, psychotherapists are trained to use feedback more than GPs are, but I think it's a fantastically helpful skill for all GPs to use when they feel stuck. If you feel able to do this, even saying things like, I feel stuck, that I don't have a clear way forward with this in order to help you in the way I would have wished. That's a really effective way of using feedback to demonstrate that you aren't the person who can fix everything that the patient had hoped you could.
Yeah, I think those are all really good approaches. Certainly on the odd occasion where I've been very open with a patient how I'm feeling about the consultation, it has seemed to have worked. And I do recognise that ego battle and the slight way that my hackles go up when the patient says, I've got tonsillitis. They present with a diagnosis rather than a symptom. So we're all human and we all bring our own stresses and emotions to work. And I'm sure that part of consultations that go wrong is to do with how the patient makes us feel and how we react. How do you deal with those sorts of issues?
So this relates to that concept of housekeeping that Roger Neighbour introduced us to in the inner consultation. It's that awareness that we need to understand how we feel in order to be an effective clinician. What we're trying to do is balance the competing aspects of how we feel internally. We want to help and we want to assist because that makes us feel pretty good as clinicians. We love the consultations where we have an easy solution, the patient thanks us for it and walks out saying, you're the best doctor ever. And we feel that there's a struggle when the patient says, what do you mean you can't do that? This service is useless, or they become very hypercritical. And so we want to help and assist, and we want to try and fix a problem, but we also want to stay safe and work effectively and not be drawn into working outside of our role or outside of our competency. And so we need to recognize that when there may be difficulty before we go into a consultation, we might have some information from the reception team or a triage that gives us a bit of a heads up that something may be difficult. Sometimes we feel it within the consultation. You gave the example of feeling your hackles rising. If you can build the skill in understanding what is it that's pushing my buttons. And for me, when I was at a very early stage in my career, the thing that used to frustrate me was when patients would say, oh, I've just come for a referral to the specialist. And it would feel that there was a discounting of my ability. And I was thinking, well, I've trained for 11 and a half years to get to the position where I'm a GP. What do you mean you're discounting my ability and my experience? It doesn't feel very good. But understanding what pushes your buttons is really helpful. Sometimes it can happen after a consultation. We can get that spark in the back of our brain or that sort of tickly feeling on the back of our neck that makes us think, that didn't quite go to plan. Maybe I just need to course correct this. And I have found myself sort of ringing up patients later in the day and saying, when a consultation has become a bit dysfunctional and there's been some friction, I've rung the patient and said, look, I just want to give you a call about earlier. I just want to check in because I think we got off on the wrong foot. And often that's been a really helpful thing to do. And I wouldn't suggest doing it in every consultation, but sometimes it can be really helpful to just course correct. And patients want to see the human in the person they're dealing with, particularly when they feel vulnerable. They're showing your human side, showing your personality, but also keeping yourself safe can be a really helpful way of course correcting. I think when we feel that our housekeeping or our stress has been triggered, we need a few things. We need a strategy to emotionally regulate. We need time for that strategy to kick in, and we need somewhere to discharge the emotion. A bit like when you charge a defibrillator waiting to administer the shock and it doesn't happen, you've got to discharge some of that static because otherwise it's going to come out in an unhelpful way and it might start to bleed into your home life or cause problems with colleagues, and you might find yourself getting frustrated and taking that into other arenas. For me, emotional regulation kind of comes from staying healthy, eating well, exercising, making sure that I'm keeping my nervous system, my cognitive function in the shape it needs to be at to function, because this is what I have to do every day. I have to be able to think, I have to be able to manage my blood pressure going up, my heart rate going up when I feel uncertainty or I feel on edge, and also talking with colleagues about how I feel and what I might do differently. And sometimes labeling the emotion you feel and what triggered it can be really helpful. I felt on edge. I didn't feel good enough. I felt like things could have gone better. I think one of the things that I'm really keen to do is to help doctors actually express how they feel rather than express how they think they should feel, because I think it it makes that sort of hidden curriculum of medicine disappear a little bit. We're all told to be perfect, to do well, to never admit weakness. And actually, I think that does us a disservice as an organization, as a profession in the long run. Simple things also help, you know, making sure that you're adequately hydrated, drinking tea and coffee when you need to, getting up, moving around, shaking off the emotion, chatting with a colleague. Those sorts of things are really helpful.
Yeah, I think those are all really important things for us to do, and to own the emotions. And I think that was a really good point about sometimes contacting the patient. I do remember the first time my trainer suggested I do that after a consultation, hadn't gotten well as a registrar. And I thought, oh God, that'll be awful. They're just going to think I'm completely incompetent. So I had to phone back. But they were actually so thrilled that I was thinking about them afterwards. And it really did move the doctor-patient relationship on. So you've been a GP for nearly 15 years. And I'm guessing that you probably deal with these situations differently now from how you would have managed them when newly qualified. And you've talked a little bit about how some things made you feel when you were newly qualified. What are the general trends, do you think, in how people handle tricky consultations at the various points in their careers?
I think that's a really good question. And it's something that I have sort of reflected on internally, but I also see it when I'm training GP registrars, or whether I'm debriefing sort of newly qualified GPs or speaking to colleagues, that we all have a different way of doing things. I think sort of newly qualified GPs are often looking to get the diagnosis correct. They are sort of focused on doing things perfectly, to making sure they don't miss something. And they can sometimes, and I certainly did, rush in a little bit too much with medicalizing, trying to do too much, trying to go the extra mile. And it takes a while to build confidence, to sort of sit back, look at the big picture, you know, become aware of long-term changes, you know, societal changes, changes in how we diagnose. And I guess probably the most relevant example is how the diagnosis of things like neurodiversity has changed over the last 15 years, and actually seeing the signs in people that I've known a long time. And I think actually maybe there's something going on here that I would have missed had I rushed in to focus on just the presenting symptom that someone comes in with. I think the other thing is making sure that you are being aware of being sucked into trying to fix everything, trying to over-rescue, and being pulled into what we call the drama triangle. You have a patient who presents in a vulnerable state. They're often, you are the first port of call, often for anything health-related. And we often see this for things such as, you know, dentistry, which GP really has no place in dealing with. Or when a patient is in a primary care situation and they're between appointments and they come to us to help rather than going back to the person that would probably be better placed to help them deal with the situation. And it can be really hard to not get sucked into that, because when we're newly qualified, we want that validation. We want that feeling of doing a good job, of feeling that we are the person that we trained to be. And what tends to happen if you get pulled in to those situations is often you tend to get more of your fair share of patients who actually bring difficulty with them. And there is this concept of handing back the monkey to the patient, of, you know, a patient comes in and their symptoms are represented as this analogy of a sort of screaming, frustrated monkey, and they hand it to you for the duration of the consultation. And if you take every patient's monkey, you're going to be left feeling overwhelmed and threatened and frustrated, and you're not going to enjoy your job. And you have to find a way of saying, thank you for sharing with me what you shared with me. We focused on the bit that I can help with, and now I've got to hand this back to you. And often just being aware of your own boundaries is a transition that happens to GPs from that newly qualified status to a status where they feel that they've got the miles under the belt and they know what they're doing. I think the other thing that we tend to see is that, you know, experienced GPs have seen the same types of consultation over and over again. After about 5 to maybe 6 years, you're fairly comfortable with the 30 to 40 things that we see day in, day out. You know, you've been through the mill of doing the tests for things like tiredness, and they come back negative. and you know how to, you've learned a pattern, a way of explaining that to patients. You're avoiding over-testing because you're not rushing to fill what we would call the uncertainty gap, that gap between what a patient feels and what we can medically offer to them, because we know that psychology, lifestyle, chronic stress, for which there is no blood test, plays a huge part in how people sleep, how they feel, how fatigue happens. We also need to balance that with being aware of things that come through the science and the evidence, things such as long COVID, how we manage things like chronic fatigue syndrome. And, you know, we need also to give ourselves a bit of a break sometimes. We can be very hard on ourselves, particularly when we may have missed a diagnosis. And I'm sure this resonates with you, where we might miss something, and then for the next 6 months, every patient who comes in with a symptom that in any way resembles the thing that we missed gets over-tested and over-treated. And we have to sort of re-benchmark after that process and learn that actually, you know, we aren't going to get it right 100% of the time, but we do have to keep things safe and have a strategy and a way of building that relationship with patients so that they come back, so that they trust us to re-evaluate and to re-change the plan if it comes. I think the other thing that I'm sort of a little bit sad about is that the NHS now is not what it was 15 years ago, and there is more frustration both within the organisation and from patients who access the various bits of the NHS. And, you know, we all, when we're in a position where we're fighting our corner, we can get sucked into this sort of tribal system where secondary care becomes pitted against primary care. Everything is everyone else's job to sort, and actually it's about recognizing what is our job to sort and how do we work in a system to the best of our ability where the right person is doing the right thing at the right time, so that this sort of tribalism and frustration doesn't bleed out into disadvantaging patients accessing care. Because when we get those sorts of comments about oh, GPs are useless, or the NHS is falling apart, or secondary care was awful, or I've had a 16-hour wait in A&E, it really can feel like a personal attack, particularly to us as often the first port of call for many patients. And the skill is recognizing what's yours, what's the patient's, and what's the system's responsibility. Trying to seek balance, you know, our brains are primed to recognize negative emotion because that's the threatening one, and our brains are primed to keep us safe. So we have a tendency to fixate on the negative to the detriment of recognizing the positive. So in some ways, we do have to deliberately focus on the positive as well. And I think that helps us shift our mindset so that everything becomes a bit more positive than it could otherwise do.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Doctors are often very hard on themselves, very sometimes bordering on sort of control freakery, and we need to work out what we can sort for the patient in front of us and what we actually have no impact on. That was fantastic, Ed. Thank you so much. It was really useful to hear those perspectives, and I'm certainly going to take some of those back into my surgery. I think that's all we've got time for today. Thank you to everyone for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please do have a look at the e-learning website, where you'll find the module that goes with the podcast, which has videos illustrating some difficult consultations and how to make them go better, as well as a lot of e-learning on a variety of other subjects. Thanks very much to Ed for being here today, and for everyone for listening, and goodbye.